you know, this past weekend, I was watching a movie with Michaela. It's called The Village by M. Night Shyamalan. You know the man who's known for the plot twist at the end of the movies, right?
The plot twist, yes. Changes the stories and the narratives of the archetypes.
Right, and although this was an older movie, I watched it and I thought, this is really emblematic of what we're going through right now in American society. Things are dangerous. These foes are very formidable that we're fighting against. And to separate yourself and make your own society is really something powerful.
It's not good, Bucko.
It's not good. You have to face your foes. You have to change what's going on.
Was your room clean when you watched the movie?
I did notice that all the rooms were clean on this society. Something good about it. And scene. I don't know why I sort of sound like Irish. I don't know. Very tough. It's very tough to master the
good old Jordan. I thought you were going to give the movie review in the Jordan Peterson voice.
Oh, well, I did more of a cultural commentary on it than anything. I can give my movie review of The Village
if
you guys want. Maybe we'll do that at the end of the show today because we're going to talk about movies and series and TV shows, which one you would want to watch for the rest of your life if you could only choose.
Yours would be The Village.
Mine would
be M. Night Shyamalan only.
I'll get into my movie review on that. But there's an interesting sort of tangent or parallel between The Village and what we're about to talk about in our first story. In The Village, these families choose to sort of secede from American society and make their own little village that they live in, and they have their own set of rules, sort of Amish-like. But Dennis Prager got asked a question on his fireside chat about how he felt about secession. I want to play that clip for you guys, and apparently there's some controversy around it. Dennis has been in the news a lot lately.
He has. Yeah, so I think they were just watching Mediaites as like one of these self-proclaimed watchdog organizations, mm-hmm. and just found this clip and was like, ooh, look, Dennis Prager's talking about secession, I think in the way of like fomenting it somehow, but really someone just asked him a question about it, and he had a very interesting answer, so we're going to listen to it.
Here it is.
With our ideology so vastly different and our country rapidly declining, what are your thoughts about secession? I don't know of any other time in my life where things are so radically different with no end and coming together. The Republicans with power are doing nothing to fight for us. Besides praying, how will we survive as one United States? Sincerely, Tracy. We may not survive. There is no guarantee. I spoke about choice in the beginning here. We will choose whether to be the United States of America and keep holding the values of the founders or reject them. The left rejects them. So we're not the United States of America. America is the only country that's an idea. It's not an ethnicity, right? If I said, draw me a picture of a Swede, you'd pretty much be able to draw the picture. Draw me a picture of a Ugandan, you'd be able to draw me the picture. Draw me a picture of a Korean, you'd be able to draw me the picture. Draw a picture of an American. Anything you drew would be accurate. If you drew a Ugandan, a Korean, a Swede, you'd be correct, right? That's the whole point. We're not an ethnicity. We're not a race. We're an idea. No idea, no America. The idea is liberty. In God we trust, liberty e pluribus unum, from many one. That's the idea. It's on every coin. I didn't make it up. It's the American Trinity, as I've called it for decades. So yes, we're losing that idea. It's under assault. That is correct. Very, very little people hate giants. Midgets hate giants. Sorry for using the term midget, not referring to people physically. Moral midgets hate moral giants. People who hate the founders are moral midgets. Those were giants. They founded a country, and I'm not sure we can keep it, as Benjamin Franklin said. It's a republic if you can keep it. Not sure we can keep it. And yes, so there might be secession. It's very sad if it would happen, but personally, I would live in a state governed by Judeo-Christian values versus one that governed by left-wing values. And in 100 years, let's see who prospers.
There we go. That's all Dennis had to say.
I always wanted to be a real...
Oh my gosh. Okay. There we go. That's what Dennis had to say about secession. Now, I could see where left-wing media would look at this and go, look at that. Dennis Prager just advocated for secession from the Union. He said that he would much rather live in a Judeo-Christian America than a leftist one. And of course, there's going to be heat around that. But is that not true?
And also, Sarah Silverman said the same thing.
Right.
It was just like a month or two ago on her own podcast. She was like, I don't know if we can be reconciled. And hers, I think, was over vax mandates or something like that. But yeah, I mean, this is not a new... I don't understand why this is necessarily a controversial take. Also, did Will Witt pose this question? It sounded like it.
You know. Right.
The conservatives in power aren't doing anything to fight for us. That's right. Totally a Will Witt point, which is...
It is.
Seems to be true. Yeah. Can't really argue with it.
He's not necessarily wrong when he makes that point. But who wouldn't want to live in a society that elevates their values over the values of others? I understand that. But at the very least, we want to live in a society that values every single point of view. And right now we are losing that in America. And that is a sad state of affairs. And it's one thing to try and coexist with differing values. And that's what we're trying to do right now. That's what everybody's trying to do in America. Hopefully, obviously, and maybe that's too big of a statement. Not everybody is trying to do that, but that's what most people are trying to do in America right now. But if that becomes impossible, what is the other option?
Yeah. And I like how Dennis framed it as not can we coexist with like minor differences in our mm-hmm. values, but can we exist as a nation with leftist values versus traditional American values and Judeo-Christian values is basically what he said. He said America's founded on an idea, mm-hmm. and it's the only country that is. And if we are now saying what it means to be an American traditionally, in the traditional sense, is what the founders aspired to create right. is no longer worth pursuing, then that was the glue that held us together as a country. And if we don't have that, then we can't have a country that holds together, because now we have a whole subset of the population that's going toward a different vision of a leftist utopia building. And it's not based on Judeo-Christian values and Enlightenment liberalism and having a elected democratic republic of representative with representatives who know your interests. It's now truth is no longer a sacred value, mm-hmm. and whatever serves the utopia, the end justifies the means. And so we can suppress your rights and take them away if you're hindering our progress. And, you know, that is the path that America seems to be on now. And so, yeah, if there's a solution where it's like, okay, well, everyone who wants that, you guys go over there. And sure. Everyone who wants to be America, we'll do that.
Yeah, it's just that. Yeah, the ideas are fundamentally opposed, as Taylor said. They're fundamentally opposed. They're nearly opposites at this point. There is some continuity with what we believe if we would actually sit down and talk it through, but we won't talk it through anymore. Yeah. And the discussions aren't happening. And I don't think we're at the point of talking about a secession just quite yet in America, although I would not be surprised if that becomes a discussion that needs to be had later down the line. We've seen civil war trending on Twitter, I don't know, every couple of weeks now, which is crazy to even think about. And it's something that's trending on both sides. Both sides are talking about it, and both sides are in some ways advocating for it. I hope that we can build parallel societies that function near each other or beside each other without it being a violent thing. And that's the key part of this. Well, and
we talked about it last week on the podcast too. This whole, when is the last time you've heard the idea of tolerance, mm-hmm. or the idea of pluralism? Pluralism being like many different people who think differently, who come from different backgrounds, who come from different approaches, but we're all able to coexist in a society together. And we no longer really have, you cannot have pluralism when you have one group, especially a dominant group, saying, no, you must comply. You must think the way that we think. And so the pluralism is no longer being allowed. Tolerance is no longer. And tolerance, it used to be this like, oh, liberals care about, you know, they cry about tolerance because, you know, you have to have PC language and that you're intolerant if you say anything non-PC. But now it's tolerance. There is not even something that's celebrated anymore, you know, because they don't want tolerance. They want compliance and you may not have another opinion than what we put out there. Then what is it called? I have this new phrase in my head, progressive orthodoxy. Hmm. It's the mainstream narrative. It's what you hear on mainstream media. That's what you hear in Hollywood. And if you deviate from the progressive orthodoxy, then you must be suppressed, silenced, castigated, and punished and excluded. And you must not be given a platform. you know, and that is the opposite of pluralism. And that's, again, what is essential. It's like if you have two teams on a football field, they're both agree that they're playing football.
Right.
So they're playing by the same set of rules. But if one all of a sudden decides, you know what, we're playing rugby now and whatever, we're going to change the rules of the game, then you're no longer playing the same game. And I feel like as a country, you can't change the fundamental rules that you're playing by. But if you are trying to create a socially engineered society based on leftist values toward this utopian vision, and you're willing to dispense with facts and dispense with people's inalienable rights and violate the spirit of the Constitution and Declaration of Independence in the process of doing that, mm-hmm. then you are fundamentally changing the rules of the game, and you're not playing America anymore. You're playing something else. You're not playing, you know, a representative democracy, democratic republic anymore. You're playing something else, and right. that cannot happen.
Right, and that's why the analogy goes even further. The sports analogy goes even further. Not only are they saying, okay, you signed up for football, but we're playing rugby, they're also saying you're not allowed to play any sports games anymore.
Yeah.
You're not allowed to even step on the field anymore. In fact, you're not even allowed in to spectate on the games that we're playing anymore. And we talked about my speech at WSU, but that was a common theme in my speech and what I said. And at one point, I have a video on my Instagram that you can go and watch. I broke down a police shooting that PragerU posted on their Instagram live in front of everybody. And this girl made the point and said, well, if you are not studying criminal justice, if you're not a police officer, if you're not involved or formally educated in this subject matter, you shouldn't be able to talk about it. And that is such a dangerous thing to think. And to that, I responded, the only prerequisite for you speaking your opinion is having an opinion. That's the only prerequisite. And that's why freedom of speech is so important. And she responded by saying, you wouldn't say that to a surgeon, that the only prerequisite you need to cutting somebody open is cutting somebody open. And that's crazy that we now view speaking our opinion and sharing what we think in the same vein as a surgeon doing surgery in America, that you somehow need some formal education to do that, that you need to be backed by a PhD to share what you think. That's scary. That's dangerous.
Yeah, it's this idea of trust the experts and credentialism, and just having a degree behind my name means that I somehow should be, it doesn't matter whether what I say checks out, whether the facts behind it checks out, whether I can lay out the evidence or make a compelling rational argument. Mm-hmm. It's about, just trust me. I'm a scientist. Trust me. I'm an expert on gender theory. Trust me. I know this or that.
Right.
And you should just take my word for granted, regardless of whether facts dispute it, regardless of whether it makes any logical sense, regardless of whether what I'm proposing has crazy, terrible consequences and harms people that I'm claiming to help, which is essentially what we see across the board with from the left these days.
Right. Isn't that right, Will?
Absolutely.
Wow. Great point, Will. Love that. Love that. But we do have some small victories. I'm not one to get into the vein of trying to own people or necessarily proving ourselves right. I'm more in the vein of speaking truth. But speaking of sports, let's get into this article out of the Daily Wire. The Red State World Series, a Democrat nightmare. So, Taylor, I'm obviously going to get this wrong if I try to explain sports terminology, the World Series versus All-Star, whatever. You explain what happened with the MLB.
So essentially, earlier this year, I think it was February or something, they have an All-Star game that the MLB puts on, and they pick one city from around the country that gets to host it, and it's a boon for that city's economy, and it's just a nice thing that you get to host the All-Star game, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that happened to coincide. Well, they picked Atlanta this year. They were slated to host it.
Right.
It happened to coincide with the passing of legislation in Georgia that was about voting. What was it? The voter ID legislation, which we have a whole video about and debunking the idea that it's somehow discriminatory.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, the left freaked out about this, even all the way up to Barack Obama. There were all sorts of calls of, oh my God, you know, we can't reward Georgia. Georgia needs to be punished for this. And there was pressure on the MLB. The MLB caved to the mob and removed the game from Georgia and ended up sending it to Denver, Colorado, which I believe actually has stricter voter ID laws than Georgia did in the first place. But
amazing.
I digress. But anyways, here, fast forward a few months, and guess who is going to the World Series? The Atlanta Braves. And so they will be hosting two, possibly three World Series games in Atlanta in the very place where the MLB took the game out of several months ago.
And you said they're playing against who? The Texas Astros?
Is
that right?
They're close. The Houston Astros.
Houston Astros. Yeah. Okay. So, well, they're technically Texas Astros.
This is also another like piece of delicious irony because, you know, the left hates the abortion legislation coming out of Texas. They're trying to save babies, and God forbid we do that. So a Texas team versus the Atlanta Braves in Georgia for the World Series is what we get to watch. And so I'm sure the left is loving all of this. Now, right. I will say I have a bad taste in my mouth about Houston because they were caught red-handed in the biggest cheating scandal in MLB history, probably, besides like maybe Mark McGwire. The steroid
era. Steroid cheating?
They had a whole system set up. It's kind of, if you don't know baseball, it's kind of hard to explain. But basically, like, the catcher signals to the pitcher what pitch you should throw.
Which is not
right.
And
the batter doesn't know what that pitch is going to be.
Okay.
So you can throw a curveball, you can throw a slider, fastball, whatever. Right. They were communicating the signals that the catcher was making to the batter. They figured out a way to do that on their own team so that they were basically giving their batter an advantage to know what pitch was coming.
Wow, American ingenuity.
Yeah.
Ah.
But they were caught in that. But they won the World Series doing that. And now 2 years later, they're back. But they were like punished. They lost draft picks. And, you know, I can't believe they're back already. But
that is crazy.
Anyways, so we have mixed feelings about Houston as a baseball team, but it's still delicious irony to just see the Georgia hosting World Series games with a Texas team go free in free states.
And it's great to go tee-hee, ha-ha, look, it's a cell phone, we won, they're doing it. Now they're supporting two states who support our values more than they support leftist values. But I think it points to an even larger truth when it comes to leftist ideology. And that is that, one, the outrage is selective. Two, that it comes and goes. Like, you are the oppressed person now. It is extremely cyclical, and the cycle moves on to other groups. And again, I've been talking about this a lot lately. It's that the outrage lasts for maybe what, a few weeks, and then suddenly we move on, and they get to go back to being involved in hypocrisy. And that's exactly what's happening with the MLB. The fact that they're having these games in Atlanta, the fact that they have a Texas team coming, your outrage is selective. And to the people who subscribe to leftist ideology now, and they do so because they think they're a victim, guess what? Your time is coming. It's going to be a very short time now, and a new victim will be chosen. I saw a TikTok the other day, and I think we showed it on the show, talking about how the radical feminists are transphobic and they should be called out in the leftist movement. Do we remember when radical feminists were the bastion of leftism? This is who we were trying to protect. Women at all costs, believe all women, the future is female. Do we remember that phase of leftism? And now we are eating our own on the left and saying that the radical feminists are now transphobes. So again, you are the victim for now. There will be somebody else the next week. There will be somebody else the next month. There will be somebody else the next year. And eventually, the victims become the enemies, as we saw in that TikTok where the radical feminists are now the enemies of the left. They are quite literally eating their own.
Yeah, I mean, it must be this destabilizing sort of fearful thing to be on the left, because you never know when the target's going to be on your back. You never know when you weren't woke enough about something, or whether you said something 5 years ago that's going to get you canceled these days. You know what I mean? It's such a transient set. It's like your feet are on moving quicksand. And when you're trying to plant them in any stable sense of morality to make judgments about things, it's moving, and it's arbitrary, and it's based on these postmodern ideas that don't have any grounding in anything secure and true. And that's where it keeps on evolving. And so as soon as you plant your foot to like, okay, well, let's make a push into this, you know, against radical feminism or whatever, you end up not having any consistency in your beliefs. And it's just laughable. But I can't imagine what it's like to be living in this world view as you have, because it lacks stability and lacks, and it's just like you're a dog chasing whatever outraged car drives by you on the street that day.
And you know, and people, a lot of people on the left won't admit to it, but there is fear around it. There is fear to, one, self-censor yourself, and also to keep up with the ethical musings of what is happening on the left. And it's hard to keep up with. The language is always changing. There's so many new words, I feel like, on a day-to-day basis that we have to keep up with in order to keep our eye on the ball when it comes to fighting this ideology.
It still blows my mind, to your point, that like 5 years ago, no one had imaginary pronouns or identities.
Right.
It was not a thing. You know, we've just, all this stuff is just appearing out of thin air, and all of a sudden it's the new orthodoxy that if you don't subscribe to it and uphold it and affirm it, and anyone who says that they identify as a, you know, dragon or something and their pronouns right. are Zire.
And then, demon now.
Yeah, demon and deem. Then, yeah, you're some kind of bigot who, how could you ever believe this when 5 years ago the person accusing you of being a bigot had never known what a different gender pronoun even was.
Right.
It's insane.
And that's a perfect segue into our next segment, because there is a professor, one who left Portland, the university he was working at Portland, after being berated by the woke political left, Peter Boghossian, who is now putting out a series that goes through all these different terms and all these different semantics to sort of educate us on what they mean so that we can keep up with what's going on. Here's his first video. We're going to go through a few in this series. This one is on relativism.
Relativism. The word relativism means everything, like culture, morality, art, and law, is subjective. That is, there's no outside or external view of something. For example, the relativist believes there's no way for a Westerner to make a moral judgment about women's rights in Pakistan. That's because any judgment the Westerner would make is from their particular cultural perspective. In other words, there's no way to step outside of a system and make an independent, objective judgment. Another way to think about this is that there's no God's eye view of anything. Things are just true for some people and not true for other people. And because everything is viewed from a particular position, this means that there is no objective truth. This is convenient if you're trying to defend behavior that's morally reprehensible, like female genital mutilation. If you're a relativist, you merely state that anyone who is criticizing such behavior is only doing so from their own particular cultural point of view. In other words, it's just your opinion. Mm-hmm. The woke relativist can also add that any criticism of female genital mutilation is racist if the people doing so have dark skin.
So interesting again, and it's so nice to hear these words distilled down. And again, that was a 1 minute and 15 second video that gave you such an insight as to what's happening right now. And I'm going to keep taking it back to Winona State University and my experience there, because I feel like I put the issues that we talk about in this show under a microscope when I got there. I got to see it in the micro level and just how deep it is in our society. Again, it's like that girl telling me, like, how are you able to comment on something if you're not formally educated in something? And in fact, when the point that Peter makes, it's often better that we step outside of a situation to comment on it, because people within that situation are very likely to be motivated by visceral emotions, feelings, rather than objectivity. And relativism is dangerous in that way, that it starts to invalidate people's opinions, even though in many ways, they're objectively true.
Yeah, it replaces objective truth with subjective truth. And when you do that, it's like now your feelings become the ultimate, like how strongly I feel about something is now what I appeal to whether I'm right or wrong.
Right.
And it used to be that if I disagree with you, you can appeal to objective facts. You mm-hmm. can appeal to science. You can appeal to rational arguments to say, well, you're wrong, and here's why.
Mm-hmm.
But now they reject those ideas. They think science is, or like objective facts and using logic is white supremacy. And they reject that as a quote unquote lens that you're looking through of this whiteness, and you're upholding the system of whiteness by using rational thought and empirical science and all this type of stuff. And so we no longer have objective truth as an arbiter to appeal to say, hey, you're wrong because we both agree. It's like we talked about before with the whole we're playing by different rules. We agree when we're having a conversation that if we're playing by the rules of truth, we're playing by the rules of facts, we're playing by the rules of logical arguments.
Right.
But if we're not both playing by those rules and you don't care what objective truth is, then we have no way to play the game together.
Exactly.
We cannot have a productive conversation. And that's exactly what the world that they're creating with this object, with subjectivity.
Right. I had a girl walk up to me, one of the protesters, and said, what if your reality is not my reality? What if your objective truth is not a reflection of my objective truth? And that's just wild to me. And it's obviously our realities are different. Our lives are very much different. My life is different than Taylor's. My life is different from Scott's. Scott's is different from Taylor's. But that doesn't point away from the fact that there are objective truths within this life that we all share, that we are all privy to. And that's the push right now, is to say that no, there's no such thing as objective truth. It is simply your truth. And if your truth is different than mine, then we will battle it out, and whoever can silence the other fast enough is the winner. And that's what becomes reality. And that's very, very scary. Now we're going to get into another video from Peter Boghossian in this series. This is neoliberal.
Neoliberal. When the woke call someone a neoliberal, they basically mean that person is a capitalist and economically conservative. Typical neoliberal beliefs include strong private property rights, free markets, and free trade. Neoliberalism is a word that's used fairly commonly by the woke, but not only by the woke. Here's what you need to know about the word neoliberal. Nobody identifies as a neoliberal. This is because neoliberal is only used negatively or as an insult. So, when you hear the word neoliberal, or if you're called a neoliberal, translate that as, this individual believes that my economic views are wrong and that my holding them makes me a bad person.
Can you explain that further? That one kind of lost me a little bit.
I think it's like a slur or a word that woke people use.
Right.
He's in the academic world, so I think this is more something that they deal with there. And he's a liberal, by the way. He's a liberal atheist philosophy professor. But I think it's just a technical word that the woke use to say, you know, I'm calling you neoliberal, which means that I think that your economic views of free markets and free trade and property rights are wrong and stupid, and you're an anti-leftist, and you know, you're not leftist enough, and so you're a loser and I hate you.
So you're a loser and I hate you. No, I mean, there's power in creating these new terms and making them part of the cultural lexicon. There's a lot of power in it, because then we start to forget what the actual foundation of our beliefs were. And in order to do that and do that successfully, you have to keep changing what people are called and this sort of ideology, which is actually why, how do you feel about political labels? We've had this discussion.
Yeah, personally, we have. Mm-hmm. I don't think we've had it on the air. But
no, we haven't.
I generally don't like them. Mm-hmm. I prefer, ask me what I think about a subject and let's talk about it.
Right.
And it's more about, like we talked about before, we can't have meaningful dialogue if I can't appeal to objective truth to as an arbiter of our disagreements. We also can't have meaningful dialogue when the label that I have on me is distorting your perception of, if it's loaded with assumptions of who my ethics, my worldview, my views on a range of topics, that if you just slap this label on me, then you already come with all these preconceptions about what I think that could be wrong. And you would have a completely, that would actually hinder us from having a productive conversation. I would rather start from nothing and then build our way. We already have so little in common. Labels can push us further apart before we even have the chance to realize that the things that we do have in common, or that the ways in which we can build a productive conversation. So I would rather start with no labels and just say, let's talk about topic.
Right.
And then let's get your take on this topic. Here's mine. And let's, you use this buzzword. What do you mean by that? You know, that is a way to actually try to understand someone's position and share ideas and build on each other's perspectives. That's a way to have a conversation. But labels, more often than not, hinder that in the polarized society we live in today.
Yeah, that's what I've come to learn. And it's been a change for me from moving from a conservative area to California. And it was something that I didn't truly think about until I got here and started experiencing it on a personal level. Of course, when I was in Florida and I said, I'm a conservative, everybody's like, well, that's great. You're a conservative. I already know how you feel about this and that. And it's fine for them, I guess, to make those assumptions, even though they could be wrong in many cases. But coming here to Los Angeles, I've been sort of trepidatious about telling people that I'm a conservative. They'll ask me what I do. I say I work in politics. And then they go, what kind of politics? And then at the beginning, I would say, I'm a conservative. And immediately you see like the eyes go, okay. Well, I didn't know that. I didn't know that you believe that. I didn't know you were a bigot or whatever they thought. And now I sort of say, well, I work in politics, and if you want to ask me about a certain thing, I took that from Taylor. if you want to ask me about a certain thing, then I'll answer to that certain thing. And that brings a lot more success. I often have trouble even identifying with the conservative label because of how badly we are characterized. And I think that's probably something that's shared on the left as well. I see a lot of people on the left who don't want to identify as being a leftist because that comes with a lot of extreme views about how you perceive the world and what you advocate for.
Yeah, I mean, real world example, we chose not to address the whole Alec Baldwin thing on this show this week because Amla and I saw a lot of the stuff coming out of the right about it, and we were like, we don't want to be grouped in with the people who are talking about this in this way. It's a tragedy, and you know, there's plenty to be critical of and stuff, but it shouldn't be something, we didn't feel like particularly motivated to politicize it or try to use it as an opportunity to dunk on a person with whom we disagree politically just because this tragedy happened.
Yeah.
You know? And so that was the thing, though, where like, well, other people who we have overlap with our views and our values that we're outspoken about are going out there and saying a lot about this, and we weren't quite on the same page, but that's a case of like where labels, well, we're grouped with them anyway, ride or die. And that it's tough because you know, and there's a difference, I think, as well with what you're saying is of between, you know, hiding what you think or, you know, being afraid to say what you think and being strategic in how you approach conversation in effort to change, so to truly change someone's mind and to approach a conversation in good faith.
Right.
You can totally crash. It's like the plane will never get off the ground if you start, a lot of times, if you start with labels. Now I think there is a time and place to be unapologetic and to say, no, boldly, hey, here's what I think. I'm a conservative. I kind of have these values, and you should never lie about what you believe or, you know, shy away from saying it out of intimidation.
Mm-hmm.
You can be wise and strategic with how you're managing relationships and how you're approaching conversations on a case by case basis.
Yeah. And I do want to do a little deep dive into the Alec Baldwin thing for a second. I'm not going to talk about it too much because I don't think we should talk about it all that much. It's getting enough media attention as it is. But I wasn't here on the show when this story broke. And what I want to do is actually take a moment to, yes, criticize the political right, because the response from a lot of people, many of whom that I respect, around this Alec Baldwin thing was really unwarranted. This is a tragedy. It was something horrible that happened. You saw the pictures of Alec Baldwin crying outside the movie set. This is a horrible thing for anybody. It's a horrible thing for that woman and that man who were shot. It's a horrible thing for him to have done it. And we so often on the right accuse the media and leftist political personalities for jumping on stories before all the facts are even put out there. But on the right, we heard Alec Baldwin killed somebody and he had a gun. And immediately people hopped on the internet to call out old tweets of his and to talk about how he's anti-Second Amendment and all that crazy stuff. I just don't think it was the time. It was not the venue. And we still don't have all the facts around what happened on that movie set. So,
yeah. I mean, that's about as much as there is to be said about it, as far as I'm concerned.
Right.
You know, it's a sad tragedy. And yeah, I mean, it is regretful, though, that the atmosphere that we live in is so polarized, and everyone's so ready to use anything to as a opportunity to pounce and jump on the other side. And it's just not, you know, it's not always, you don't need to go there immediately every time something happens in the news cycle.
It's like, what I try to think about before I say anything is this going to change mind, or is this going to be incendiary? Is this going to cause a problem? And that's what we should be thinking about, because if you are in the political sphere of things, I don't care if you're a personality or you're just somebody on the internet, your goal should be to unite people and to at the very least have people understand why you feel the way that you feel. The attacking that's happening on both sides is not conducive for building unity. You are literally asking for division. You are asking for split societies. Now, let's get into another Peter Boghossian video. I believe this one is diversity.
Diversity. When the woke use the word diversity, they mean people who look different but think alike. For example, a diverse hiring pool would include people who look different but have nearly identical opinions about social, cultural, and political issues. A black conservative, for example, would not be a diverse candidate because even though a black conservative looks different from the majority group, he doesn't subscribe to the woke worldview. Ultimately, when you hear the word diversity, translate that as a desire for superficial differences while holding an identical worldview.
That's exactly right. I love these videos. Everybody should go and watch them. I'm sure there's more of these, but to do that in 35 seconds and just completely define something is amazing. Yeah, and we did a story on this before. You saw the MSNBC video of the reporter, a black reporter, saying that although Candace and I forget who else she called out, she called out some black personalities on the left and said, even though they are black faces, they are not black voices. Mm-hmm. And that shows what their view of diversity is. It is not diversity of thought. It's not diversity of opinion. It's not diversity of even background, upbringing, or socioeconomic status. It is diversity of simply how you look. And that's just wild.
Many skin colors, one opinion. Right. Diversity according to the left. It's really tragic because, you know, it gives diversity. When you hear it, it makes you just roll your eyes these days. Mm-hmm. But real diversity, it is a beautiful thing to have people from different, like I'm someone who grew up, I'm a missionary kid. I lived in 3 foreign countries before I graduated high school and have been to, you know, 20 some odd countries around the world. My dad's been to like 70s or something crazy. Mm-hmm. And not as a tourist, by the way, as someone who like goes and like lives these places and sees the world through the eyes of other people and other people groups. And you learn not just about differences in cultures, but how similar you are as human beings. Yep. As well. As a Christian, I look at it and I see it as when experiencing the world through these other people's eyes and seeing the different ways in which God manifests himself and his creativity and his goodness through his creation in different peoples. It's a beautiful thing. And that is something like to be celebrated, and it's moving. And that is true diversity. That's what it's about. It's like, yep, understanding our common humanity and also relishing in how we're created or how we are different, and coming up the same mountain of life through different, you know, sides of that same mountain. And that's a beautiful thing. And there's so much to learn, and it's such an enriching thing. Mm-hmm. But to reduce diversity to you have another skin color, but you think the same as me about leftist ideas on politics or whatever, that is, yeah, it's so reductive, and it robs us of what the diversity really does have to offer us. So that is the most tragic thing about this whole, the way that they're construing this.
Yeah, I found the biggest breakthrough that you have with talking about people, whether or not they agree with you or disagree with you, is talking about socioeconomic status. When I was talking to people who were on the left and some of whom were protesting against me, the one point that I really wanted to drive in is we have so much more in common over the fact that we were raised lower middle class than we do with our skin color or with our gender. And if we talked about that, we would be able to unite and fight what really needs to be fought. The point that Will makes, the elitists and the corporations and the corporatism that we're experiencing right now, if we united over our shared experience through where we've been in terms of economic status, a problem that's getting bigger and bigger in this country, we would be unstoppable. Yeah. But people so often just want to look at you and make that assumption there first. Now we have one more video by Peter Boghossian. This is on inclusion.
Inclusion. What the woke mean by inclusion is restricting speech. Here's how it works. An inclusive space is a welcoming space. And who wouldn't want to create a welcoming space? But to make people feel welcome, you have to make sure they are not offended. Because if they're offended, they'll no longer feel welcome. The best way to make sure people aren't offended is to exclude certain ideas. In order to exclude certain ideas, you have to make sure people don't say certain things, things that could make people feel unwelcome. So, an inclusive space means an environment that restricts speech.
It's very true. You can't say anything these days. We saw that with Dave Chappelle.
I was just thinking the same thing.
Yeah, you say one word that can be misconstrued. It doesn't matter what the entirety of your... I don't care if his whole comedy sketch was about how much he loved trans people and how we need to have a campaign to make trans people equal in our society in every way, shape, and form. Because he said one thing that offended somebody in the trans community, that comedy special is now controversial. It no longer matters what your intent is when you say things. It no longer matters whether or not you have love for a community, you're part of a community. It does not matter. So long as you've said something that has offended, you're done for.
Yeah, I would argue that Dave Chappelle was being inclusive by including trans people on along with every single other group that he went after,
right?
Or made a joke about. By excluding them, that is really what is exclusive. You know, the people who push for inclusivity are actually causing the trans people to be excluded by saying that they are too weak to take a joke. They're too weak-minded, mm-hmm. or too soft or too emotionally unstable to be able to be included in on the joke. And I used this example before when the story came up originally, but you know, when a group of guys is getting to know each other, and when you're you know, like boys in school or whatever, guys just you rag on each other a little bit. It could be construed as bullying, and it definitely crosses a line, but there's a very healthy way for guys to just kind of competitively jar at each other a little bit, and the fact that I can jar with you, yeah. is a sign of respect, and it shows that like you're included in our group of dudes because, you know, I respect you enough to not think that you're such a snowflake and that you are going to be so offended by it. And it's really a disrespect and a coddling, and that signals that you think less of these people, that you demand that they be coddled to.
Yeah.
And that is the opposite of inclusion. You're literally causing them to be excluded. It's crazy.
Do you want to be the person that people tiptoe around? And that they don't feel like they can be themselves around, or they can't say anything to you? And yeah, like Taylor said, it's a part of growing up. It's a part of coming of age. It's a part of being a member of a community in a society.
Do you want to be a pluralistic community, as we mentioned before?
Yeah, pluralism. It's a part of pluralism. Do you want to be excluded in that? Then you know. Then we really get into the idea of your reality not being true reality, because people are morphing what they do and say around you in a way that comforts you, or at least makes you feel like you're not being attacked in any way. And yeah, Dave went after so many different community groups in his comedy special, including his own community group, Black men. And still, we chose the one little section that we felt like, again, supported the victim of the time. The victim of the time right now is Black people and trans people. So that we took that because he's a Black person. We're not going to take the Black part because he's Black. He's allowed to say it. So we took the trans part and we went, let's run a whole campaign around this. Let's protest. Let's strike at Netflix and let's hold up our picket signs outside. And that's what we do.
He went way harder after lesbians too.
Right. Way harder.
Like,
and
way
after
harder.
Black women. And you didn't hear a single thing about it.
Yeah, they're not the you know, oppressed group du jour. So
yep.
That, you know, there's no outrage over that.
Yeah. So now that we've gotten our lesson today, and I learned things today, I learned about neoliberalism, and I like that we can learn on this stream together. I always like to say I'm a conservative, but I'm a learning conservative. I'm subject to change at all times, which is how I got here. But now we're going to get into TikTok Tuesday. We've got some fun TikToks for you today. We've got some serious ones. We're going to try to do the serious ones first, but I found this one in particular, and it's a clip from The Breakfast Club. They had a psychologist on to talk about how he viewed Black America and how he viewed the problems that Black America is now facing. And he had some interesting things to say.
Real quick, what is The Breakfast Club for those of us who aren't regular watchers?
Breakfast Club is a radio show. You might have heard of like Charlemagne the God. He's often on Breakfast Club, but it's typically a Black entertainment radio show where they talk about music, they talk about culture. It became viral once when Nick Cannon was on it talking about how white people were dogs. I don't know if you remember that, Taylor.
Yes.
You remember Nick Cannon's?
We clipped that on PragerU last year. It was pretty crazy.
Yeah, they have a lot of different people on The Breakfast Club to talk about a lot of different ideas.
So this is not the 80s movie with Emilio Estevez.
No, it is not.
Okay.
So let's get into this. This got 1.6 million likes, and I thought, this is profound. Maybe this is waking people up.
Be the spell. I'm hearing Black people going around saying that slavery destroyed the Black family. Nothing could be further from the truth. Slavery didn't destroy the Black family. Do you know that we were still getting married through slavery? Jumping a broom in secret, even under punishment of death? We were married during Reconstruction. We were married during civil rights. When do you begin to see the rise of the single-parented Black female household? 1970. After they killed Dr. King, the United States government said we must neutralize the Black power base. And they determined that the Black power base was the Black family. It was independent Black skilled men and women who financed King,
So I'm going to pause this for a second. Now, there are some sort of conspiracy undertones in this, but he does talk about larger things that did happen in the 1960s and the 1970s, not just to Black Americans, but to all Americans. It just so happened to disproportionately affect Black America. And him talking about how Black Americans were building nuclear families during the Reconstruction era, during slavery, during Jim Crow is absolutely true. And we saw some of the biggest decreases in the black poverty rate from 1940 to 1960 while there was legislated racism happening in America. You can read more about that in Discrimination and Disparities, written by Tom Sowell, a great book that sort of outlines a lot of the points that he makes in this. But there are bigger problems for Black America than slavery. And to have somebody point this out on The Breakfast Club, which is largely watched by Black America and has been widely known to be very, very left-leaning on The Breakfast Club, is very interesting. Let's continue watching.
Finance Mr. Garvey, finance Mr. Muhammad, finance SNCC and CORE, the Freedom Riders in the sit-in movement. So they said, if we want to crush the black struggle, we got to crush the black family. So guess what they did in 1970? King dies in 68. In 1970, they came into the black communities and deindustrialized our city centers. In 1970, they started shutting down the factories. Remember, up until the 50s and 60s, you didn't need a college degree to get a decent job. Many of us got grandparents who worked in factories their whole life and lived better lives than we're living now with 2 and 3 degrees. They could work in their same neighborhood, and everybody worked for the factory. Good retirement, pension, benefits, medical. They started shutting down the factories in 1970, and then they went into the high schools and did what? Started deindustrializing the inner city high schools. Up until 1970, you could graduate from almost any school in New York certified as a plumber, certified as an electrician, certified as a carpenter, auto body, brick mason, a welder. They took all those programs out. These are the skills that pays the bills, gentlemen.
Let's pause again. So much truth being shared in this right now. And again, I do want to highlight, this is not just for the black family in America. This was for all families. My grandmother, who's in her 80s now, worked in a factory for her young life. And what they had were factory towns. These factories would come, nearly employ every single person in the town. And they would be working, creating a good enough income to get married, have children, buy houses. And now, look at the amount of credentials you have to work in a factory today. It's insane. Mm-hmm. They're putting together all these prerequisites because they know they can make money off of you. And still, you make less money now with as a person with multiple degrees than you did back then as a person with no prior degrees who simply took a shop class or took an orientation at a factory and started working there. And that's a massive problem. I always talk about this through the lens of getting my hair done, which is a funny thing to talk about. But I get my hair done by a woman. It's very easy to braid hair. You can learn how to do it and you can open up your shop and do it now. But you have to have a permit to do that and a license to do that in California now. She needs a license to braid my hair. Why? Because these governments realize, the bureaucrats realize, I can make money off of requiring these things from you. And it makes it harder for us to build small businesses. It makes us harder to provide for our families because there are all these prerequisites that and all these hoops that we have to jump through in order to simply start a small business in America. That is crazy.
It is. I mean, I remember recently I saw a Twitter thread explaining the differences between like what it takes to open a painting business in mm-hmm. California versus in Texas.
Yep.
And in California, it was like you need to get certified. You need to get all kinds of permits. You need to have your materials like, you know, environmentally approved. And there was like literally like a list of like 20 things, each of which took a lot of time and a lot of money to do. And then once you finally accumulate those, you're approved to paint your house. And in Texas, it was like, buy a brush and a bucket of paint and you can do it.
And you're not any better at painting a house because you went through all those certifications here in California.
No, this is the cost of bureaucracy. And it's always well-intentioned stuff that I don't even want to grant it that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it just accumulates and then it never goes away. And only more layers of bureaucracy are added on top of bureaucracy. And there's nothing, you know, more permanent than, you know, one piece of legislation. And it's so rare that regulations ever get repealed.
Right. There's very few things that our government should be doing, and they should be doing those few things well. Now they're doing 1,000 things, and they're doing it all horribly. And this is one of those things.
A good recent example of this. Mm-hmm. This is, I just got married, and to get our marriage certificate, we had to, make an appointment online, but the LA's law office, LA County, where we live, is mm-hmm. His office was closed because of COVID, and they're only doing remote appointments. Well, you go on the website, website and there's no appointments available for months, 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 and months. Mm-hmm. So then we called and I waited on hold for like an hour and the net result of the conversation was the lady was like, oh, well, you just have to go on the website. And I'm like, didn't matter. I told her I already tried that. So anyway, at the end of the day, I realized we cannot book or we cannot get a marriage license in the state in Los Angeles County. Mm-hmm. And so we ended up, you know, having to go to a more conservative county right down the road in Orange County. We made an appointment for like one exactly when we wanted it a couple weekends ago. Went down there, walked in the front door. We were in there, no mask, by the way.
Right.
We were in there for 5 minutes. The guy was like, okay, hold up your right hand, blah, blah, blah. And we filled out the paperwork and we were done. And just all these stupid rules and layers of bureaucracy kept us from just doing the most simple thing that, you know, half an hour down the road, we just go to across a county line.
Yep.
And it's just done. It's amazing.
And that's why some states are going to continue to function better than others. And we will see that come to fruition.
Like Dennis said earlier with the first video we opened mm-hmm. with, like, give it 100 years living off of either your bureaucratic leftist values and the values of freedom in America and see which society is prospering.
Right. Exactly. Let's finish up this video.
As long as you have a skill, you can always feed your family. But if all you got is college degrees, you might end up in an unemployment line. Why? Because the skills that we learn in college are not necessarily marketable to other black people. I'm a psychologist. Ain't too many black people running around looking for a psychologist to reveal all the skeletons in their closet.
Yeah, you better talk to a white person.
Exactly. So they started sending us to college instead of teaching us how to work with our hands. That was the 70s. That was the economic castration of the black male. Now let's go to 1980. The CIA comes in, cocaine import agency. They drop off crack. So now the unemployed black man, who has always been a breadwinner, Envy, even in slavery, we were always the breadwinner up until 1970. Now the crack comes. You got a decision. I can sell this crack and try to put some food on the table, or I can smoke it to deal with the fact that I'm no longer economically relevant to the black woman.
Deal with that
and
trauma.
Let's be clear. The decade of the 70s was the decade of making the black man economically irrelevant to the black woman. We're the only man in America who is out-earned and out-educated by our mates. No other woman in America out-earns and out-educates their mates. And this is not the black woman's problem. I want to be clear. This was systematically done to make us irrelevant to our family. Be dispelled.
There we go. That's the end of the video. It reminds me of that Lyndon B. Johnson quote of, I'm going to have these N-words voting Democrat for 200 years. And that's true. Implemented these systems. And in a way, you could if the left was going to make an argument towards systemic racism, this would have been their best bet, yet they don't use it. But I want to point out that this was towards all races. This disproportionately affected all races, although the black family more so. And that's just an unfortunate result of this sort of policy. And progressive policies like this really do ruin cities. They ruin countries. They ruin nations.
Families.
They ruin families. Yeah, on the smallest level, they ruin families. And that's a devastating thing to realize.
What is your thought on why black men are out-earned by black women, according to this guy?
I really don't. We know that lack of fatherhood disproportionately affects men more than it affects women. Yeah. If you're going to have a parent in the household, most likely it's going to be a single mother. And if you are a daughter, that's going to be far better for you than it is for a man. So I think that's probably part of the issue. But it's something that I would have to look into to a lot further. But
we talked about this before we watched this video, and there's mm-hmm. a lot. It's very dense, and there's right. a lot we could, you know, look into more deeply mm-hmm. to really suss out. But it is very thought provoking.
It is, and the fact that it has 1.6 million likes on a platform such as TikTok is an astounding thing, which leads me to believe that a lot of people watched this not knowing what he was going to talk about and not knowing anything about this beforehand, and were educated in some small part, whether there's conspiracy to it or whatever, which we can look into. The war on drugs is something that I've very seldom looked into, and the whole crack epidemic that happened in America, the whole cocaine problem, I'm sure there is stuff around that has to do with the United States government, but it would be something that we need to look into and do a deep dive into on this show. So if you want to see that, put in the comments below underneath the show after this that you want us to do a deep dive into this TikTok in particular and the subject matters covered in it. Now, this next TikTok is titled Three Times That I Got in Trouble While Working at Google. Here we go.
Here are three different things I got in trouble for when I worked at Google. Number one, though, definitely on me. My bad.
The team I worked on was called Provider Operations, or ProOps for short. It consisted of 14 dudes and one woman. And in a meeting, I referred to ProOps as BroOps due to it being very bro-y. And to me, bro is a gender-neutral term. I got a very strongly worded email from my team lead and manager to use more inclusive language moving forward. Time number two. One of my coworkers was debating between getting an iPhone and an Android. I said to get the iPhone because girls don't want to text dudes with green texts. I got pulled into a room, basically told to check my privilege because not everyone makes enough money to afford an iPhone. Time number one. My coworker and I are coming back from lunch. The elevator doors are closing. There's someone in there. I run up, open up the door. My coworker goes, I'm going to take the stairs instead. I said, okay, I'm going to take the elevator because I made this nice lady wait already. Person gets off on the floor before mine, turns back to me and says, my pronouns are they and them. I had to attend a diversity and inclusion training. They had a dress on and hair down to their waist, but you should never assume anyone's pronouns. I learned that one. That's my bad. Those are my three. Here are three.
See, and this is, again, taking macro and putting it down to micro, really distilling it down, because it's great to say we should combat language that is offensive to other people, but this is what it actually means. This means that everybody else gets to dictate what they deem offensive, and then you get chastised for it, and you have to go to diversity and equity and inclusion meetings to talk about it. People don't see the real world effects of this. So I thought this TikTok in particular was very interesting.
Well, and speaking of real world effects, these are the people that control what you see on the internet.
Yes.
These are the people that control the search results when you search for something. They're the ones who manipulate the algorithm so where when you search for white man, it shows you black pictures of black people. So, you know, if you're talking worried about real world consequences, it's not just like, oh, haha, look at this woke culture in this company. It's right. Like, this is what they're doing to social. They're just like they're trying to socially engineer this guy's world, mm-hmm. and violate common sense and, you know, impose all this woke type of thinking on him. What do you think they're doing with whatever power that they have in your home? So, okay, Google.
Yeah.
Get out of my house.
Not much more I need to say about that. That pretty much sums it up. Think about the man behind the curtain that's controlling your search engine results. And maybe think about not using Google in the future, even though we're currently using it right now. Okay. Next one here. Now, I have to explain this one before. Taylor, it didn't quite get it. You know, in video games, when you try to do a task, right, and the video game won't allow you to do the task unless you... I feel bad having to explain the joke before the joke is even
there.
Will,
do you get this?
Will's laughing. Will's cracking up.
I think he gets it about as much as me.
Will
no.
gets it.
Emma always has to break down the TikTok trends to me, and sometimes she looks at me like,
you know,
and I'm like,
if there's one thing I'm proud of my generation for, if there's one thing I'm proud of Gen Z for, is we have a nuanced form of comedy that is growing, and I appreciate it very, very much. If nothing else, we're a funny generation. But this is a new video game.
We might ruin America.
We might ruin America, but at least we'll be laughing
on the way down.
We'll be laughing while the fires burn.
We'll definitely catch the video of America burning to the ground on TikTok.
But it's like in the video games when you try to do something and it's like, nope, you can't open this door until you find the clue, or you can't open this door until you find the notebook. Now people are doing it for like different personalities or their own personalities. So this one's made for Jordan Peterson.
Well, I should probably clean my room first. No lectures today. I've got to read the Gulag Archipelago. There's still some lobster left in the fridge.
Now we have to think about, like, what would your video game phrase be? You can't open the door until you've done what?
I don't know, but I've watched this thing that you've showed me like three times, and this time I actually got it after you explained it to me. Yeah. I was like, oh, he can't go through the door because he's remembering the stuff he has to do.
Right. It'll be like press B to open the door, and it's like, oh, you can't open the door until you've retrieved the magic notebook. You can't open, yeah. Well, it feels bad now that I've had to explain the joke before the joke happened, but hopefully you guys appreciate these. I think mine would be like, you can't open the door until you give a giggle for no reason.
Until you say it time and time again.
Until you say time and time again, can't open the door until you say of which.
Yeah, I don't know what mine would be. Mine would be like, until I take out the recycling from my wife.
Right. You can't kiss your wife until you've done the dishes.
Yeah, stuff like that.
You should probably do the dishes first. Now, this next one is a face that you might remember. Her name is, what is it, Candace Cameron Bure. You might know her from Full House or in the show she's in now currently with Netflix, Fuller House, the remake of it. This is her coming out as a conservative on TikTok. How crazy is that?
Is it me? Am I the drama? I don't think I'm the drama. Maybe I am. Am I the villain? I don't think I'm the villain. Is it me?
1.3 million likes. This is great. this is great.
It's cool. I mean, at least she gets TikTok too. Like this whole like the pre-recorded like speech or whatever that people just lip sync to about things. Like you see that all the time. It's still weird. It's still weird to me that she's like, this is how she's making a point. But
I know
it. You know, kudos to her. She gets the nuanced Gen Z, and hey, she's on Fuller House. That's for kids, right?
Yes, and it got a lot of likes, and I haven't read the comments on this one. I'm not going to because I don't want my rose-colored glasses to be shattered just yet. But I think there's something to be said about faces like this, and you associate her personality with just this like super kind, happy-go-lucky, sort of quintessential to your childhood, and her coming out as conservative, even in this small, funny way on TikTok, is super important.
It is. Yeah. So
it humanizes us. It is happy to see because it humanizes us, because now people are going to see this girl who they loved on Full House, who has now come out as a conservative. And they're like, I'm sure it shocked people's perceptions a little bit, which is great.
Now just wait for this to stir the outrage mob, and then they'll be crying that she offended them for some reason, and there'll be a walkout at Netflix until she's fired, and then Daily Wire is going to hire her
to do
their own version of Full House.
Yeah, right. Their next conservative Full House sitcom. No, but I hope that doesn't happen to her. I think this is great. We have one more TikTok for TikTok Tuesday, and this is featuring one of our very own PragerU 5-minute videos, albeit to make fun of it. But nonetheless, it got a lot of viewership and millions of likes. So here it is.
Babies are lovable and innocent, but they're not good. They're entirely self-centered, as they have to be in order to survive. I want mommy, I want milk, I want to be held, I want to be comforted. And if you do not do all these things immediately, I will ruin your life. That's not goodness, that's narcissism.
It actually is a funny clip. Like, I understand why somebody would clip this from our PragerU video. This is from a video called Are People Born Good? It's a 5-minute video.
I was just looking up what video it is.
Yeah, it's Are People Born Good featuring Dennis Prager, of course. And it is a kind of hysterical script writing for that a particular moment, so I understand.
Yeah, I mean, in context, he's using that as an example, but I could see how it's kind of silly to laugh at. I mean,
right.
This was a girl in college who posted this as like part of her. She was assigned to watch this, I think.
Right.
And just thought it was giggly, funny.
But hey, all publicity is technically good publicity.
That's right.
That got millions and millions of views, 2.5 million likes on it. And I'm sure people saw that and go like, what video is this? Like, what is PragerU? And they're going to go and look up our videos. And maybe we're going to red pill some people in that process.
Yeah,
so
they're going to be like, wow, I thought people were born good, but now I realize they're not.
Right. Even jokes at our expense are good for PragerU. And that's the end of TikTok Tuesday. We have one more little activity that we're going to indulge ourselves in today. And this is out of Barstool Sports. Here's their question for asking the internet. If you had the choice to choose one movie franchise and one TV series to watch for the rest of your life, which one would you choose? You guys put your answers down below in the chat, and we will judge them. I was thinking about this. I think TV series is definitely The Office because it's got everything that I want. It's got every character archetype you could possibly ask for. It's got comedy, it's got drama, it's got sadness, it's got romance. We've got some action with Threat Level Midnight. You have everything you could ever ask for in a TV series, all encompassed in The Office. So that's what I choose for TV.
The Office is a good one. Yeah, it'd be tough to pick like a serious like series, just because, I don't know, you'd get, once you know, like Peaky Blinders or something, like once you know the story, it's like, I can't watch that over and over again.
Right.
Something like The Office, you could watch over and over again. My other favorite comedy series for TV would be Seinfeld and Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Mm.
And since they're still making Always Sunny in Philadelphia and it's on like season 15,
oh, yeah.
I think I might select that.
Smart choice.
Even though the recent seasons I haven't liked as much.
But. Yeah, what is something with like hella seasons in it? My grandmother would say General Hospital because it's on season like 40 or 50. She's been watching it ever since the beginning and she watches it every day. So shout out to my grandma.
Yeah, like
she'd
the
probably
Simpsons
choose that.
Has a million seasons now.
Yeah.
They're still making them.
I also really love Futurama. Futurama is a really good TV series. That one's on the list for sure.
South Park, Scott
South
says,
Park. I get annoyed with South
Park.
Yeah,
I don't
though.
Like all those animated ones. I watched like one or two seasons of Rick and Morty.
Rick and Morty was
kind of got into it, but I don't know.
Will and I have been talking about BoJack Horseman. That's also a really good cartoon adult TV series. What about movie franchises? We talked about this. I'm trying to think of like, what are the longest movie franchises?
Well, I would have said Star Wars, mm-hmm. but the new ones all are terrible and don't even count. So there's really only six Star Wars films instead of like however 11 or 12 or however many they've made so far. Mm-hmm. We talked about Lord of the Rings, which would probably be my, I just would end up there, especially if you throw The Hobbit in there. That would be tough to pass up. But the problem for me with Lord of the Rings is I've literally seen them all so many times that I can play them in my head if I want to watch them. So, I don't know.
Other series are there? I'm trying to think.
Harry Potter.
You've got Harry Potter, Hunger Games, Divergent, Godfather series.
If anyone picked Hunger Games or Divergent, the only film.
I don't know.
Twilight.
If you have to pick, I picked the Twilight.
Oh
franchise.
My gosh, get out of here.
Here we go.
You can't pick teen fanfic.
Here is why I picked the Twilight series.
Oh my gosh.
Ever since I started watching Twilight and reading the books or whatever, it's just had a sentimental place in my heart just from my childhood. And I never get tired of watching these movie series, even though I actively recognize that they are not good. I actively recognize they're not good. They have a certain cinematography to them that is just perfectly catered for the genre, perfectly catered for this particular franchise. The character development is whack, but you can still laugh at it, and the romance is still good. So I picked Twilight, actually. For the rest of my life, I picked Twilight, and you guys can hate on me in the comments after this.
Your 16-year-old girl is showing.
Who's Team Edward? And there's no other team. It's just Team Edward. So thank you guys. Maybe I'll do a Twilight review.
Yeah, I saw like the first one, then I barely remember it, but I only watched it because I was like this girl at the time and she wanted to watch it.
If I have to watch Lord of the Rings, maybe we'll do this. Will and Taylor subject me to Lord of the Rings. I subject Will and Taylor to Twilight. And Twilight's shorter than Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, I mean, so I guess I could do it.
It'll be an even share, and then we'll come and we'll review the series on the show for you guys.
Batman would be another one to pick.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of series
in that. If I could just pick Christopher Nolan movies, that might be the one. You can watch Tenet enough times to actually try to figure it out.
Well, you can't. That's not technically a franchise, but I guess if you could choose a director, he'd be. Tenet is so good. I've seen Tenet 3 times now.
I still haven't seen it yet. I need to watch it.
Okay. Well, we'll put that on the list, too.
Yeah, just because you picked Twilight, I'm going to go Lord of the Rings because I have to balance out your flippant teen fiction with something transcendently good.
Will, I'm sure you would pick Lord of the Rings, too, right?
Indiana Jones?
Wouldn't you, Will? Yep.
Yeah, Will's,
Lord of the Rings.
Will's with me.
Lord of the Rings. Anyways, guys, that's our show for today. Thank you for watching. I hope you had a fantastic Tuesday. Please like, subscribe, click the notification bell to be notified every single day when we go live. We have a survey that we're going to put down below in the description of this video that we want to fill out, getting your opinion on the show. If you don't fill it out, I'll be fired. So fill it out. Let us know how you feel about the show, what segments you like, what segments you don't like, what segments you would like to see that we're not doing yet, and what other PragerU content that you watch. You can also leave us little notes, and if we get some really good ones, maybe some funny ones, maybe some super sweet ones, we will talk about them on the show live for you guys and give you guys a little shout out. So if you'd like to listen to us rather than watching us, you can go to Google Play, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, leave us a 5-star review there to let everybody know that you love the show. We are trying to up our listening ship on, is that a good word?
Listenership.
Yeah. On those programs. So please go check them out and subscribe to us. And we will be back tomorrow with another episode. Bye, guys.
See ya.